Hey, it's Bootstrapped Web. We're back 2 weeks in a row. All right, Jordan, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. Of course, I leave for Michigan for 2 weeks tomorrow, so we'll take 2 weeks off. But hey, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off sounds like a very European approach to our podcasting summer.
That's right. That's right. And I actually think that the longer breaks are kind of good, even though listeners start to complain to us sometimes. But like, we just don't do that much in a span of like 6 days, you know? So
yes, a lot happens in those 2 weeks. So I think in the fall, we'll get back into the weekly routine. But here we are 2 weeks in a row. I do have a few topics to talk about. How about you?
Yeah, I got a couple things, a couple small things, updates.
Cool. I'll give my preview on what I have and we'll see what we get to. Number one, I have that saying that startups more often die from indigestion than starvation because they're trying to do too much. I'm keeping that in mind as we are approaching several big opportunities, and I want to make sure we don't try to tackle all of them. The other thing is that we're changing our employment agreements to allow for side projects. I could talk about how that came about. I am starting to have a lot of doubts about Slack and how central it is to our communication, how we do things. I'm worried about how that's going. So yeah, so those are my big three to talk about.
I'm still, you know, fully focused on Process Kit, but I do have one audience ops thing that talking about doing some case studies for ourselves at audience ops. And we also do that for clients and some thoughts around that. But then everything else is Process Kit. So prioritizing, I talked about this last week because I have a hard time prioritizing right now because I have so many things that are really competing for the top priority. How am I sort of navigating that? Came to a few small conclusions on that. And then the marketing site for Process Kit is coming along. Definitely made some progress on it. Got the copy all mostly finalized with the help of Liana Patch. That was really great. I posted a YouTube video going in depth on that. This last one, it was just that I did get around to setting up Help Scout for Process Kit. So both for the knowledge base docs, I have all the features documented, but very bare bones for now. And then I'm using their live chat. They call it Beacon thing. So yeah, I got that set up finally.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, we could talk about Help Scout. We could talk about that tweet storm from Alex Turnbull from Groove. We have been using HubSpot for everything. It's really impressing us. We use it for help docs. We use it for that chat function. Yeah, it's working out so far. I was definitely skeptical and worried.
I didn't even know that HubSpot did help docs, but I guess at this point, HubSpot is trying to basically take over your entire business. So.
Yes, that's exactly what they want. And so you will never leave, which at this point, we will never leave.
Yeah.
So they win.
Yep.
That's okay, as long as it works. All right, cool. So I can kick it off with the indigestion starvation issue. Previously, I would have a relatively easy time getting a sense for when we're trying to do too much. And what I'm worried about right now is I because there are now a few layers between me and everyone else in the company, I don't feel it as much. I don't have the same sensitivity of, oh, if I decide to strategically go after this opportunity, what does that actually mean for everybody? Am I overextending the team? Am I overextending our capacity? Am I creating more problems than it's worth? We had three big opportunities all bubble up this week. And so I want to do all of them. Obviously, they're opportunities.
What is an opportunity? Like,
so I can't get too far into it. One is a market opportunity that I sense, like going after a specific segment of the market in a specific way with a partner.
Would that mean like building a new product feature for that market or just some like marketing work, like a new page and like stuff like that?
Right. Well, that's really what it comes down to. It's if you want to pursue this opportunity, what does it actually mean? In this situation, it's an efficient opportunity to go after. It does involve technical work. So it's maybe 2 weeks of technical work and then almost no additional work beyond that other than a co-marketing promotion. So it's still work. And no matter what we do, everything we choose to do means something else isn't getting done. There's no room in the pie. If you take one section of the pie, you're removing it from another. So that's still tricky, but I'm thinking about it the same way you are. How efficient is it? What trade-offs? What work actually has to get done in order to pursue it? The other one is a bit similar in nature. It's more of a business model opportunity on monetizing a piece of our business in a better way. But that does take technical work and more technical work, but it's bigger opportunity. it's all like these competing factors and priorities. And then the last one is bigger and longer term. And so what I'm trying to do is check in with people instead of just deciding on my own, I believe this is a good opportunity, we should go after it. I'm coming to the people that it would affect the most and saying, here's what I'm thinking, here's why. Remove yourself, put on your manager hat, your business owner hat. Think strategy with me, and then we'll turn it around and we'll think more practically. But first, let's see. Don't take into account how busy and stressed you feel. Let's look at it objectively as the opportunity, because if we think it's a good opportunity, we can make it work. We'll shift priorities. We'll hire. We'll do something to go after.
You're in an interesting position. I haven't really been in your spot in this phase of like a product software company before, but where it's like in the early years, you know, you have these opportunities that you have to go after, but you personally are involved in making them happen with your team. But like you're also have your hands in like everything, like you did in the first few years. And then it's like when you get into this phase of it, you still have plenty of opportunities, probably much bigger ones, but you're not in the day to day. And it's almost like having that separation, that free time is dangerous. Whereas you used to be hustling and doing the work, now your only role is like the visionary. So establishing these opportunities. Yes. So it's like at a certain point you have to step back and just let the ship go for a while without going for something new. But
you're not generating pain for yourself. When you generate pain for yourself, you're very aware of how much pain it is and whether or not it's worth it. When other people are kind of put into a position where you make the decision, but they take the pain, all of a sudden you get that disconnect. So I've been keeping that saying in mind, the starvation, you know, startups more often die from indigestion than from starvation, trying to do too much. And I also keep in mind Heaton Shaw came out with a post about how he like almost broke Crazy Egg.
Yeah.
Right. And it was like Heaton bombs. It was like, I have a new idea. Right. And then people would start to follow that idea. And if you do that too much, you kind of mess up the momentum.
That and this kind of reminds me of that Jason Fried thing, similar idea where he was like, I think it was a tweet of his. He said, as the CEO, you have to be careful about just mentioning ideas offhand to your team, you know, because
people take it as directive.
Yeah. Yeah. Like and they're going to run with it. Maybe so, maybe not, but like they're going to give it a lot more weight than maybe you even intended. Like maybe it was a not fully formed idea, maybe just spitballing, like whatever it is, you don't want to send somebody down a path that you didn't mean to.
Yes, I had to get better at that because I think out loud. It's one of the advantages of having an office full of people is you just can walk over and say, can you just spitball with me here and go back and forth? But now it's always with the preamble of, I'm just thinking about this. This is preliminary. I don't want to pursue this. Just help me think through this. All right, cool. Over to you.
So with Audience Ops, I mean, I've been obviously completely focused on Process Kit. Just before my Europe trip, this is about 2 months ago, it kind of occurred to me, number one, that our leads, our new leads for Audience Ops kind of slowed down as we got into the summer. Two, we haven't done case studies in a while for Audience Ops. We did our own back in 2016, I think. We did a round of them. And what I did then was I interviewed some clients on the Audience Ops podcast, which was a thing back then. And then I cut like a little snippets from those conversations. Those were like full podcast episodes with talking to clients. And then I took like a 5-minute snippet where they were talking about their experience with Audience Ops, and I made that into a video testimonial, and a few of them we developed into like case study articles. So this summer, I'm not spending any of my time on Audience Ops, but I did want to do something to maybe get some kind of marketing push for Audience Ops. My personal goal with it is like, what can I do that takes zero of Brian's time? There are plenty of things that I should be doing with the Audience Ops business to grow it. I can name like 5 different growth opportunities. We're just talking about growth opportunities. I have made plenty of lists of things that should be done that are not getting done, and I don't plan to do them anytime soon because I'm just not focused on that business. So I'm limited to the set of things that can be done without my input at all, and or very, very little input. And case studies is one of those things because like we do case studies pretty regularly for our clients. I don't do enough to advertise that, but we do them where like the client will just introduce us to some of their customers, our writers, or podcasters will interview them and will produce them as like case study pieces. So the thought was, let me go to the team and ask them, hey, can you give me a list of who you think our best clients are? I mean, all of our clients are great, but the ones that they that the managers sense have been like the longest term happiest clients. And they gave me back like a list of got like a list of about 10 or 12 of our clients who fit that. I think I said like give me ones that have only been on board for like longer than 6 or 8 months or something like that.
Right, the ideal customers.
So I got that list, and then this time around I gave them the plan of like, you guys can do everything that I did back in 2016 with the interviews. So one of our podcasters has started doing the interviews with those clients. Then we're going to pass those interviews off to one of our best writers on the team, and she's going to kind of spin those into additional articles featuring the client. And then we're going to take those and cut video testimonials and text testimonials that we could use. So we're going to eventually come out with about 10 or 12 of these, probably later in the year. They take a while to produce. And the other thought with this is to actually make this a package that we offer from Audience Ops. And we've done case studies. We've just sort of worked it into our normal monthly packages, but we don't really advertise that, hey, this is a case study thing. So now what I want to do is start to have like a new package that you can buy from Audience Ops, which is like our case studies package. It comes with a pack of 5 or 10 case studies, and included in that are video, audio, and text case studies. Everything that I just described that we're doing for ourselves, we're going to do for clients. And I think that'll be a good offering to go along with our existing blogging stuff, because it's like not new for us. It doesn't take any new work for us to create that service, because we've already been doing it.
Same process, same people.
Same exact process, same people. And it's something that, we have done. We just haven't advertised it. And I think it's something that I could give to a new salesperson to go out and sell.
They're very sellable because you can connect to ROI more closely. There's like blog content that is helpful, and then case studies, it's like one step below fully advertising your own product.
Right, exactly. And for like working with a salesperson, which I did start to do this summer, one of the managers will eventually step into the sales role. It's a tool that she could use to go back to existing clients, maybe who've paused service in the past to offer that, or to go to current clients to keep them, retain clients longer, is to offer this new form of content. There's a lot that we can do with it, you know, and we could even go, we could do outbound marketing to clients who maybe they have a blog, but they're not doing any case studies, like, or vice versa. So like there are different things we could do with that. But again, like the whole goal with that idea was something that's like low hanging fruit that could be high impact, that doesn't take my time, and the team is running with it. Like they began it while I was in Europe, and they're doing the interviews now. I'm not really touching that project at all anymore. It's just rolling along, and I'm working on process good.
Yeah, sounds like a very efficient way to do marketing. Not only is it good for your marketing, and it doesn't require your input, but as they're doing it, they're laying down the tracks for the process that they can then offer your customers. And it can be a nice entry point in, don't commit to us writing for you for every month, but here's another option that gets you into our system, lets you get to know our process, our quality.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I love it.
Because we haven't really offered everything that we've offered is the ongoing retainer service. We don't have like a one-time offer. And I never liked the idea of selling like one-off articles. We just don't do that. It would still be like a sizable package that we offer, you know?
Yes. I'd be interested to see how you repurpose the content that well, right? From video to text to testimonials and articles.
Yeah. I mean, we're actually turning them into real articles, like not just a glorified testimonial. And the interview with the client is like a legit podcast episode.
Right. Like, what was your problem? What were you trying to do?
Yeah. I mean, it's a 30-minute conversation about the client and like their whole world and how our client's product fit into some part of that, you know.
That's great sales material for if you're trying to sell case studies, hearing someone who had the problem and what they did about it and how it affected them. That's beautiful.
Yep. Yep.
Nice, man.
I think there was one more thing about that. I forgot what it was. Anyway. Yeah.
I don't know if you remember. let us know. All right. So next up for me is I've been doing a lot of, I guess, what I'll call corporate work. I hired a people consultant, which maybe a year ago I would have thought sounded ridiculous. And now it feels very, very necessary because I'm just inexperienced when it comes to people management, performance reviews, and setting clear expectations on someone's career path, and just these things that I do not have experience with. So
like hiring an HR person?
It's a bit like HR. I think it's called people now. Like people management is really the discipline because it's more than what we think of HR as like, well, when I have a question about benefits, I'll go to the HR person. It's a lot more than that. It's how do we make sure people are happy and they understand what's happening and they have clear lines of communication and all these different things. So I've been working with her and it's been fantastic. The project that we're doing now is about titles and compensation. And so it was great to define titles. Early on, you get started and you want to ignore titles. You want to say titles don't matter. And that very quickly becomes untrue. The truth is titles matter a lot less to the CEO than anyone else. Let's be honest. We went through and defined these different titles. What is a VP? What are they responsible for? What is a director? What is a manager? What's a lead? What's an individual contributor? So these categories of titles, and then you read the description that goes along with each, and then you start to look at your existing team and you can start to fit people in on, okay, this makes sense for this person. And then once we started to sort that out, then we did the compensation reviews and looked at surveys that we were able to buy online to see, okay, software company, non-major market, right? Not New York, LA, San Francisco, revenue level. And then it started to give us a range. And I started to be able to see, are people being compensated properly? Are they not? What adjustments do we need to be made? So I've been doing that for the past few weeks. And it feels more stable because the uncertainty of, I hope I'm paying this person the right amount. I don't know if I'm overpaying them or underpaying. I don't know if they're unhappy right now because they think they can get more money somewhere else. It was a lot of uncertainty around that. And so now my next challenge is communicating it to the team on helping people understand, here's where you are, here's where you need to take on in order to get to that next step. This is what the salary should be here. We made sure that you're fairly compensated now. Here's where it goes later. Just like clarity.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's also where that the title and the compensation, they have a lot of meaning because you have to plan for their growth, the employee's growth and the growth of the company. And like, I think the classic mistake that I've heard a lot of companies make, and I've spoken to, you know, founders who are well established with larger teams now, and they're like, it's easy to early on make somebody like a C-level that should not be like there has to be room for them to grow.
Yes. Yes. So a lot of those issues are, yeah, they're really easy to make those mistakes. And then they're really hard to correct. And you can get into a situation where people doing the same job have very different compensation and that doesn't feel right. So there's just a lot of it. And I felt we should do it now before we get ourselves into too messy of a position. Happily, when we did all the reviews, we're really not very far off overall. There aren't issues of, oh, the title isn't appropriate. We need to bring them down. So fortunately, that's not the case. I think that would be a lot more difficult. I'm just happy we're doing it now. So that's the first piece on the corporate side. The other part is interesting because if I were an employee, I would want the ability to have a side project. What happened was one of our employees came to me and said, so I'm building something on the side. How do we handle it? And I said, well, let me go check with our lawyer and see if we can do this the right way. I looked at our docs and our docs are, I mean, it's my fault. Whenever I speak to the lawyer, I'm like, do not mess around. Be as advantageous to the company as possible. Let's be honest here. That's my responsibility. But the employment agreement, the standard employment agreement that is friendly toward the company, it basically says we own everything that you do, no matter when you do it, regardless of what equipment, during work, not during work, related to the industry, competitive, not, we own everything. And reading that didn't feel right. And so at first I didn't really know what to do. I went to a Slack group of a bunch of other founders and kind of just brought this up. I got flamed. I got flamed. Like that's not right, man. I wouldn't want to work for your company is really what people were saying. And so that helped me realize, well, okay, if I'm going to listen to those people and that's an indicator, and I'm going to check my own gut, I'm going to pretend if I were an employee, how I would want to feel. The conclusion we came to is that it doesn't feel right not to allow side projects, and to discourage entrepreneurship that way just feels completely wrong. The conclusion we came to was we need to conform the legal docs need to change. They need to conform to our philosophy as opposed to bending our philosophy toward the legal agreements just because that's what was signed. So now we're in the process of changing those docs, and I'll have that communication challenge. I mean, it's not a challenge. It's a good communication. So at the next all hands, I'll effectively say, so everyone's about to get a new version of their employment agreement. And the reason for the change is because we want to allow for side projects. And it was just kind of a little check. And I think I was like, I wasn't 100% good on it. I wasn't, oh, that makes no sense. Let's change it immediately. If I'm being honest with myself, there was a part of me that said, well, these are already signed. People agreed to it. Like, is it the right thing for me to do to change that? So I wasn't perfectly good on it, but I'm happy about the conclusion I came to.
I think it's the right decision to review it and change it and make it so that side projects are not impossible to do, or not allowed. Allowed.
Yes, exactly.
The gray area, which you're probably working through, is like the where it becomes like a non-compete issue.
Yes,
like industry specific or software. Like how do you navigate that?
So the non-compete part is
or like technology that was used in cars.
Yes, and so things like that. It also encompasses ideas, right? That's the issue. A lot of our value is in the ideas that we're pursuing and how we're pursuing them. Now those things are everyone gets that. You can't compete with the company because then the company is rightfully going to go after you. The tricky part is the advantage you might get from your position. So what I mean by that is we have an app store, right? We launched an app store recently, a Cardhook app store. So we have our API opened up. You can apply as a partner. You can build an app for Cardhook. So should we allow an employee to build an app for Cardhook? Is that okay? You're getting into this situation where one employee is going to be working on something and then the person next to them is going to be looking over like, so they launched an app and now because they're an employee and they're close with the people that work here, they're going to get an advantage and they're going to start making a lot more money than I am.
Right. There are a few companies in similar situations with app stores like that.
Yes. So employees launch things and then you think about, okay, what about a competitor? It's easy for us to poke at Shopify because they have a lot of these issues. And now we're starting to just get a little tiny glimpse of it and it's already complicated. So I have more sympathy for Shopify's situation in just playing those favorites. It's hard not to play favorites. So we're thinking through, okay, we're going to change the legal docs so people can have side projects, but it can't be a free for all. We do have to be careful on the limitations we set so things are fair.
Yeah. I mean, generally, I'm all for side projects, though. I mean, I think it's really important for employees and entrepreneurs alike to have side projects. You know, everyone knows I've got plenty of side projects. You know, personally, like that's just been a personal struggle for me to do side projects that are not business related. Like I've been trying to get back into music this year and get into biking, and I do those as side hustles. But I think it's important to have like a creative – what I found with myself, this is probably true of most employees too, most people who work in this industry, is that it's hard for me to have a side interest that is not entrepreneurial-like. If you like that.
Income-based.
Like well, maybe not even income-based, but like I'm building something towards some larger goal. Like music is one of those things. I've been trying to spend the weekends and some spare hours, which I don't have many, you know, in my basement studio, like making music. But like, I'm not just strumming the guitar aimlessly. There's something there. There's some thoughts of like someday it'd be cool to like be able to release stuff on Spotify or something like that. You know, like, and so I think for employees, especially creative people, like they need that other outlet. you know, Josh Pickford has talked a lot about this with his company, how like they actively encourage and support side hustles, you know?
Yes. I always think of Ian Landsman. His company is a hotbed of other projects. So many things have come out of Ian's employees, things that affect everybody. I mean, didn't Laravel like come out of that? I don't know that right, but yeah, that whole crew is, they just bubble over with new projects, and Ian encourages it. And that's a good, thing to aim for.
Yep. Sure. So prioritizing, and this is kind of a theme with your first thing about, and I talked about this last week. Yeah. The trade-offs. I mean, with Process Kit right now, there are so many things that need to happen that I want to happen in July 2019, and there's no way these are going to happen this month. Many of them not even next month or the month after. But it's just one of those things where you get to this stage. The paying customer count is increasing, still very slowly, but like there's interest there, and I do have daily communication with people who are interested. So I'm feeling that sense of like there's like an inkling of momentum or like light at the end of the tunnel, but like there's still so much that I just don't have in hand to give to people yet. Or like I have invited people to the app, they start to use it and they're like, oh, but like, can it like archive projects, or can I restrict permissions to projects? Like, oh no, yeah, I haven't built that yet. Oh, that's definitely coming. Oh, that's definitely in the roadmap. It's in the plan, probably in the next few weeks. Like I'm saying that all the time. There are all these features. Like I've built the core. I talked about that. It's good enough for people to start using, and a few people have started paying for it. But there is plenty in the roadmap. The big ones, the big differentiators, the power features, but even some like not power features, but like kind of essential features that I didn't get around to building yet, like the ability to archive projects. That's one that I just shipped the other day. But like before that, like, you can create like 100 projects, but you can't get rid of them. you could permanently delete them, but you can't archive them.
So you build the archive function. The next thing you know, people say, so how can I unarchive? And then you have to build that too.
Right. And the other one that I'm currently working on right now is permissions on individual projects. You know,
it doesn't sound core, but the way your product is used, it is more central.
At least three people who did free trials, they're like, I can't use this unless I have projects that my employees won't see. Like,
okay.
It's like fair stuff enough. That like processes and like bookkeeping processes and like performance review processes and stuff that the higher level team needs to do. Cause currently all your processes and all your projects are visible to everybody in your account. And
right.
And that's fair kind enough. Of a non-starter, you know? Yeah. So I'm like halfway through building that piece, but then people want custom fields, people want automation rules, dynamic dates, the ability to share with guests, the ability to import templates, like this stuff all needs to happen.
Yeah, so, I remember what Ben taught me about this was the key deciding factor, like the line to get over on what to build next was, are people leaving because it doesn't exist? And would people sign up if it did exist? And if it's not either of those two, it's not priority. If someone is paying and asking for something, but they wouldn't leave if you don't have it, that's not a priority.
Yeah. In my case, it's a little bit harder because I don't have like, would people leave? It's like, would people convert to paying?
Well,
because it's so new.
Maybe that's actually easier.
Yeah. But I think that's a little bit harder because it's still difficult to really confirm like, really? Right. Like you're really going to pull out your credit card? Like,
right.
They say they will. I've heard that plenty of times, you know.
Yeah. I'm working with someone now who's in the building phase, and what they did to me, which was effective, was, why don't I take your credit card and I won't charge you until the feature's ready. And I bought that. I was like, I'll put a little $150 bet on you building that feature, because if you build that feature, I'm in. And that was them getting a true indicator of, yes, they actually will sign up once this is ready.
I did that sort of with Ops Calendar. I did take prepayments months before the thing was built. And I found that like even of those like 15 people who bought it, like only four of them actually ended up being subscribers, even though they paid like $200 each. That experience made me like not trust that.
It's not 100%. It's far from 100%.
Yeah. What I did this past week was I went to my my list of features and I put them into two columns. One is like top priority. Like the thing needs these features. Like it's these are like feature parity features that like every tool has right. to have.
Not optional.
Yeah. And there's like only three or four on that list. I shipped the archiving feature. I've got like three more to build on that. Those are top priority. I'm building those right now. And I think that I can get them all done by end of July, first week of August. And then I've got another list that I called like soonish. Things that I'm definitely decided like are going in the roadmap, like things that I want to have in the tool, things that I want to put on the marketing site, but they're going to be a little bit longer and there's more of them. There's probably like seven or eight of those. And they're in that other list. And then that's a question. And I haven't really started tackling those, but as soon as I get through these top priorities, that's coming next. And I am continuing to do invites. I'm going to send another batch of invites next week, even though most of these things are not built yet. The one difference that I've changed in the invite system is now you have to get on a call with me to get your invite. Before I was like, here's the link to go sign up, you know, and that link does exist. Like if you know it, you can go sign up. But now like when I send the official invite to someone, it says like, here's my Calendly link. We'll have a call and I'll sign you up on that call together and I'll get your... because I want to hear your questions and objections right there, you know?
Yes. I think that's the right move for the foreseeable future until you feel more comfortable. The way Ryan has set things up here that has helped, part of the issue I'm assuming that you feel right now is everything feels urgent and it's impossible to have patience because you want to get everything and you want people to start paying and you want people to be satisfied and all these things all at the same time. What Ryan has set up is just the expectations around the conveyor belt. So we have our current sprint and we give that a name. We give it a food name. One time it's an American food, another time it's a Slovenian food. And at the end of the sprint, we make that food and all eat it as celebration. So it's like right now we're in banana pudding right now, which is like a Slovenian tradition to eat banana pudding.
And if it's like some food that like nobody likes, then you'll never build that feature basically.
Yeah, we've done like these Slovenian pancakes. We've done apple pie. We've all these things. So that current sprint is pretty sacred. If you have a suggestion, you have a need, you have a desire, it's probably not getting into that current sprint. It needs to be extreme because we're letting engineers focus. Now, so you're the team of engineers at the same time. So then what happens is all the focus is on the P1, P2. So priority one, priority two. These are the upcoming sprints. They haven't been named yet, but it's basically sprint one, sprint two, sprint three, sprint four that come after the current sprint. And so when you're talking to customers and you're talking and thinking among yourselves on what to prioritize, you're just shifting things. Well, that's a P1 right now. Should it be a P1? This thing on P2 people keep asking for. Let's move something from P2 into P1, but that also means something from P1 gets booted. So it at least gives you a little sense of calm.
You know, it's also so early. That stuff shifts around for me literally day to day.
So that's a little dangerous though, because you get exhausted by that.
Well, I mean, I'm only working on one feature at a time, and I'm only capable of doing one feature at a time. And new features take anywhere from like 1.5 days up to like an entire week. It's not like I'm going to code different things at the same time. I can't do that. My planning of what's next, part of me is like I make a promise to the group, like this is coming next. And then 3 days later, I hear some requests about something and I do that instead.
You know? Right. So I would suggest you consider being more formal in the process earlier on. I remember earlier on, I like talked down about it. I was like, we don't need that much formality. We're just building, just go already. And it caused more harm than good. What happens is by approaching it more formally, it gives you a sense of calm and instills some patience in you, even though you don't actually have any patience. It just forces it because you're saying to yourself, this isn't the current sprint. I'm going to do this feature, then this feature, then this feature. We do 6-week sprints. Maybe you want to do 2-week sprints. You're more nimble. But that also forces you to communicate in a very different way. So when I see an email from a big customer that's emailing Ryan on when is this thing coming out, and they CC me to like add a little bit more pressure, What I see him respond back is setting that expectation. That's going to be 4 to 6 weeks, even though he knows it should be ready next week. So it instills a sense of patience in the customer base also, and just gets them used to, you can't come at us yelling and expecting us to just drop what we're doing. So hopefully we're going to satisfy you by giving it to you in 2 weeks instead of the 4 weeks that I told you. But everybody slow it down, including us. Let us do our thing here. Everyone's better off if we are patient on our side.
That's sort of why I split up this list between like top priority and like features that I do want to build at some point soon. And because I started down the road about 2 weeks ago, I started down the road of like, let me knock off one of these like shiny new like custom fields features that I hear a lot about that I personally want. I almost started building that, but then I heard a few people who were like, I can't archive my projects and I can't set project permissions and I need a list of my to-dos or somebody else's to-dos, like, you know, sorted by date. And like those are like the more basic things that they're like, oh, like if it can't do that, then it doesn't matter how great that automation thing is. I just can't use it. Like, so I'm trying to knock off those like essentials. The power features, people can still be customers and not use those power features. But some of these basic ones that I just didn't get around to building yet are like, it's the difference between like, this is just not workable for me.
You know? Right, can't do it. Yeah, we try to have a mixture of those two in every sprint. So whether it's a housekeeping or an essential.
And it's not the greatest thing to be like this archiving projects feature. That's something that I needed to build, but I'm not going to scream from the rooftops like, this is a market. I'm not going to go market the fact that you could archive your projects. It's just like literally on the calls, they'll be like I heard the other day, they're like, I mean, I assume that I could just keep a project like visible to only myself, right? And not somebody else. And like, they just assumed that was already built. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's not.
No. You know, that doesn't come out of the box. I have to make that happen. Yeah, we call them marketing worthy features, right? The thing that you can go and write a blog post about and tweet about and say, hey, check this out. Now you can do this. We have made the mistake before where we were so focused on those essential features that we went 1, 2, 3 sprints. And the next thing you know, you don't have anything cool to talk about for 2 months. And that's not healthy.
Right.
All right. So up next, I think we're starting to wind things down. I've been thinking about Derek Reamer because I am concerned that we are in a Slack tar pit that we will never get out of. It is so addictive and so good at what it does, but I'm not convinced it's healthy for our company. So I've been re-examining how we use Slack and if we should be using Slack at all. And I've seen a few people on Twitter talk about it. I started to join some of those conversations. And Barrett from ConvertKit was saying the same thing. And people started giving good suggestions on how they mold Slack to be closer to what they want. So they have almost no conversation in public. Right. A lot of it is in DMs. People have these setting notifications. People make sure, I know we do this. We make sure that you have your email, phone number, and Skype and any other emergency contact in your profile. So if you are needed, like, how do you remove the constant synchronous nature of conversation once you've established it? Really hard.
The thing, and I'm sure that Derek probably can't stand hearing conversations like this. I would hate
that's it. That's what I thought
about. If it were me too. Because I was looking at Derek's designs for Level. I love the way that he did it because it did solve grain of salt here. Like I wouldn't have paid for, because I use Slack for free. So I probably wouldn't have paid for a tool like this. And I think Derek was right to put that tool down anyway. But the way that he designed it was there's an inbox. You have an inbox just like an email inbox. And that is the thing that kills me about Slack, is that like people send me a DM and I don't want to deal with it right now, but I don't want to lose it. Like put it in my inbox so that I can come to it later rather than like right now I have to fucking like mark this DM as unread, but don't click it again. Otherwise it becomes read again. Like,
yes. Yes, there's a lot.
Really annoying.
It's almost stressful, and it's more addictive than email.
Yeah,
because there's so many channels. You just float around from channel to channel. Let me check the billing channel, see who signed up, who canceled. Let's see what these people are talking about.
Yeah,
it's a little scary.
So Audience Ops has a Slack, but I'm kind of so checked out of Audience Ops that I really never even touch that Slack that often. But people do escalate stuff to me from there sometimes. And then I'm in like three or four that are more like mastermind groups. And that's actually where I like Slack, is when it's a group of like friends or mastermind buddies where it doesn't matter if I go off the grid for a week or two. It's not like we're working in a company together. We're just bullshitting about stuff. So if you're going to leave me a message, like, it doesn't matter if I come back to it in a week, you know?
Yes. The expectation isn't there. And that's, yeah. Slack is amazing for that.
Yeah. Like it's actually I think it's really good for those slow conversations that can happen over a long period of time. And then the other thing that I'm using it for right now, this is where it gets a little bit annoying for me again, is with ProcessKit. I have a private Slack group for early access people, and I'm getting support requests in there. I'm getting feature requests. I'm getting people requesting their invite to become a user, and it's just all mixed in there. It's not like I'm bombarded with support right now with ProcessKit, but I have it coming from so many different channels. I've got Help Scout set up, and I've got live chats from that. I've got emails. I've got DMs in Twitter. I've got DMs in Slack. We also have a Facebook group where I get feedback from. And like, some of these are like actual users who are trialing the app right now. So I need to get back to them as soon as possible. And that's kind of hard to manage. You know?
Yeah, that's the use case that Front was built for.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I've heard about that.
We used them for a really long time before we went to HubSpot. It is really good at that. It takes all of those channels and normalizes and standardizes, and you just have one inbox, regardless of if it's a Facebook message, Twitter.
Can you reply from like in your Front inbox? Like you can send a reply and it'll go out to Slack and it'll go out to Facebook instead of you having to go to Facebook.
Yes. Yes. I don't know if it works with Slack, but it might at this point. We left them a few months ago, and they're an excellent company. They execute really well. The design's good. It's not cheap, but it's a great product.
Cool. The only other thing I had real quick was the marketing site for ProcessKit. I sent this out to my list today, my newsletter and a YouTube video about it. But this is one of those things, one of those priorities that is getting pushed back, you know. But it's making some progress because I worked with Liana Patch and we basically finalized all the copy for the site. Really cool. Really well done. It's not published yet, so you can't see it online yet, except in the video that I shared earlier today. It's in this state now where I have the copy basically done. I've got the layout of the site more or less done. I'll probably tweak the look and feel, but I need to find an illustrator to make some custom graphics for it. And then I need to get it coded up and built. And somewhere in between that, I still need to build like 8 more features in the app. So, you know, but it's that challenge of like, I want this marketing site to be live so that I could start to sell it to new people who are searching for this tool today. At some point, I'm going to have to make that trade-off where it's like, the app is going to wait. I can't make any progress on that. I need to spend 2 weeks on this site right now. You know?
Yes. You are wearing many hats at the moment.
Yeah.
But all right, brother.
That's why it's fun. That's why we do this.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Cool. Well, it's good to catch up with you. I'm off to Michigan, to the Midwest for a little vacation time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Yep. Brian, talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. See you.